It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, a brand new week. We're 3 weeks into October now, and it's the 15th day of October, 2018, and this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to, click on chat room and then pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in and be greeted by the likes of Anatole and be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has once again folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, we are rocking on both streams. That's good. That's reassuring. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Of course, you can also go to HeadOn.live to become one of the folks who helps keep this program on the air. A lot more listeners. We got a lot more, it's a very small number of the folks who help keep this program on the air, relatively speaking, as compared to the number of folks who listen. So we try to raise $200 every evening. We managed to get finished with Friday night's with last week's fundraising and a Friday night community miracle. And thanks to everyone who contributed to that. So all we have to worry about this evening is $200. 10 folks at 20, 20 folks at 10. 1 at 2, 2 at 1, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half. You know the drill. Just run on over to HeadOn.live and click the PayPal button. And, hey, maybe you'd like to become a subscriber. And for something like a tenth of the price, a 25th of the price of a cup of coffee place coffee per day, you know, keep this whole thing rolling. And thank you very kindly in advance. We have thanks to send out. Thanks going out to our subscribers. Thanks to Robert in California. Thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. And thanks very much indeed to Timothy out in Iowa. Thank you, Timothy. Thanks as well to Ralps. And thanks very kindly to Matt in San Francisco. And on the 13th of the month, thanks to Gary and Gaia out in Oregon. Thank you very much indeed. So that's the subscribers for the 3 days of the weekend. Saturday, Sunday, and today. And again, thank you very, very much indeed. That's how we keep this all on the air. Of course, it's Moran Monday, and if you were able to sit down and watch the interview with Julius Geezer over the weekend on 60 Minutes without, you know, say, a great big bottle of some sort of anti-emetic, good on you. I watched it. I saw all the crazy, and it was like a masterclass in Moran. That's what it was. So that's what we'll be, we'll be going into that and a number of other things this evening, this Moran Monday. However, right now, or not right now, but here in a couple of minutes, I'm going to be, well, I'm going to take the program offline long enough to make a phone call, and we're going to be talking about a new film that is out or coming out. And I'm, well, I've gotten to see it, and it is powerful, and it is, well, infuriating. And it'll, well, you'll be able to see it yourself soon. It launches, I believe, tomorrow. The name of the film is The Devil We Know. And it features progressive radio host and world-renowned lawyer Mike Papantonio. Of course, you probably know him best from Ring of Fire. It has resonance with me because it has to do with, well, another tortured place here in West Virginia. It has to do with the C8 poisoning case, and so we will be talking about that here in just a couple of minutes. So I'll give you a heads up, and we'll go dark for a minute, and I'll get Pap on the phone, and we'll go from there. you know, I keep the camp shower, the Coleman camp shower, filled with bleach these days. Sparky says, "Did you take a bleach shower after watching the Trump thing?" I felt like it. And of course, he's down making miserable people's lives more miserable today. He and Melanoma, who is the most bullied person in the world, remember, went to Florida today, Florida and Georgia, to survey what had happened and in the wake of the hurricane. And there's no end. There's no end to the madness. At least not anytime soon, I guess. You can go to. By the way, the name of the film that we'll be talking about here. The Devil We Know: The Chemistry of a Cover-Up. You can find it at The Devil WeKnow.com, and you'll be infuriated, and it's getting a lot of press, a lot of good press. Let's check out the audio from the trailer.
Consumer products sold under the Teflon brand are safe. DuPont did in fact ask EPA to make those statements, correct?
That's correct.
When I was pregnant with Bucky, I worked for DuPont around Teflon. They tried to blame me. They said it was something that I did. The more they would tell me that, the more suspicious I got.
You did see there was a substantial risk to the women at the DuPont plant.
There was no potential risk to the women. There was a potential risk to the fetus.
It's used in consumer products, manufacturing products, and the applications were endless. These Teflon and Scotchgard chemicals permeated the living world. Today, every baby is born with Teflon chemicals in their blood.
DuPont and another company called 3M had been studying this chemical dating back to the 1950s and 1960s.
Did you work with a lot of other people that have been sick or died early?
Carol Kaplan, Jim Broadwater, Joy Weaver, Steve Bailey, Lona Carr.
They are aware of the risk of the product.
Risk is relative.
If I go out here and sprinkle arsenic around, they'd arrest me for murder.
You've lied, and they're still lying.
Everybody in this area, in one way or another, is connected to DuPont. You go dealing with somebody's livelihood, you're going to have problems.
There was a discussion about, do we need to come up with something in our production that's not going to cause these problems? They conclude, if we launch something new, it's going to cost us a lot of money. We have to stick with the devil we know.
Was I a guinea pig? What do you think?
Like I said, it's infuriating. You've got people who, well, an entire community poisoned. Just as you've got an entire state here, mostly poisoned. And every baby born has some Teflon in it now. Jesus. But in a place like West Virginia, you put profits ahead of, human well-being. So I'm going to take a moment now, and I'm going to ring up Mike Papantonio, and we're going to talk about this a little bit. So stand by a minute, please. We'll have some radio silence, some dead air, and then I'll be back. All right, so I'm on the line now, and with Mike Papantonio, and discussing the devil we know, the trial he led and was involved in, regarding the poisoning of an entire community in West Virginia. Mike, thanks so much for taking a little time for us this evening. I appreciate it.
Sure, Bob. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very kindly. How long were you involved in this litigation?
I was hired to try the test cases. There was a lawyer that had the cases. It was actually a defense firm that had not they're not really a trial firm, but they had been working on the case for about 10 years. And they simply needed somebody to put it together to figure out how to go about trying it, because it's a fairly complex case. And that's my specialty, is taking those kinds of cases and figuring out how to try them and then taking it to trial. So I was involved 2 years before the first one went to trial. But the case had been out there 10, 15 years kicking on. And I wasn't involved that long. I was involved the last 2 years actually pulling it all together.
How did people come to realize that they had been poisoned?
Doctors, local doctors, kept seeing the same pattern. What you typically see in an environmental case is you will see clusters of cancer. And the cancer will be real. It'll be very consistent with the type of cancer. It'll be this particular kind of cancer had some real signs about it. There was testicular cancer, in particular kidney cancer, and some other types of neurological issues related to it, some gastro-intro kind of problems that anything maybe mimicking Crohn's-type disease. I guess the people listening would understand that is probably one of the more common gastrointestinal serious diseases. So they started seeing these clusters of those types of diseases just popping up. So doctors started asking questions, and then there was a farmer that had a cattle ranch, and all his cattle were dying, and they were dying of the same types of problems. They had very specific kind of illnesses. They're all types of signs that were systemic problems for the same type of disease. Eyes like birth defects with three eyes in a cattle. You'd have cattle born without teeth. All types of things that were just abnormal where it comes to birth defect signs that were showing up all along where the C8 was being deposited. So there's never one thing, Bob, that tells you that there's a problem. It's a collective. All of a sudden you start seeing patterns. There's no other explanation for the pattern, and that's what they saw here. And so those are the things that we actually went to trial with.
So how did it get traced back to the C8 itself?
Well, the C8 has some real specific ways about it. Interestingly enough, if those people in that Ohio River Valley were to go get tested for C8 in their blood right now, some people would have levels that are 100 times the safe level. So what you're able to tell is somebody presents with cancer or maybe gastro-type problems, and then you test their blood and you see that the C8 levels are just off the chart. So C8 should not be, no one should have C8 in their blood. It's not created by God. It's created by DuPont.
Not naturally occurring in the environment.
Exactly. So you put those two things together and all of a sudden you see these indications of, you put together a history of high exposure. Understand, all up and down the Ohio River Valley, people were drinking. It was contaminated drinking water. It was actually in their water systems, all the major water systems all up and down the Ohio River there. So you had people that were drinking it every day, showering with it. They were using it to water their plants and their yard, and kids were playing it in swimming pools. So they were just overwhelmed with C8. C8 is now, people understand that there is a clear relationship between that and cancer. And so what the company had done for so long, of course, was covered that up. They hid that. They hired what we call biostitutes, who were simply people working in universities and big hospitals, and they pay them $300,000 for that person to sign off on clinicals that are phonied up or literature that's phonied up. The doctor or the scientist or the professor hasn't done the independent study themselves. They just want the money, so they sign off on all this stuff, and it made it sound like C8 was safe. It's actually conduct. It really is criminal conduct. I mean, if you were to go and you were to say to your neighbor, well, don't even tell them, simply dump poison in their pool for 50 years and not tell them about it, and they die, that's manslaughter. So these companies did exactly that. It was just a bigger scale. And
so,
they're corporations, so they, you know, they walked away from without criminal penalty.
And ultimately, that, I mean, it's an accountability problem because you can't stick a corporation behind bars. So,
well, you can. You can. But you had under Clinton, it was a lazy attorney general's office. Under Bush, it was a lazy office. Obama, probably the worst. We brought all this directly to Eric Holder. Eric Holder knew exactly what was going on and chose not to do anything about it. Because it's, unfortunately, we believe that there's a difference in the parties. We believe the Democratic Party is somehow better than the Republican where it comes to protecting consumers. But this is a great example where Eric Holder clearly knew what was happening. There was plenty of material to prosecute these people, and they chose not to.
Well,
because they don't look like criminals. They dress up in Armani suits. They have MBAs. They attended Harvard, and they drive around in Bentleys. So they don't look like a kid on the corner with a hoodie. They don't, you know, these are different breed of criminals. And unfortunately, the attorney generals that we've had in office over the last 25 years have sided with those kinds of criminals, including Eric Holder, who I'm probably the most disappointed in because he had all the information and chose to do nothing.
Well, and how much did, I mean, obviously I'm a West Virginian, and I know a little bit about the, I've said for years it's separate from DuPont, but people have asked me about West Virginia politics, and I've said, you know, in West Virginia, we have colocrats and colicans.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm very familiar with it. I've tried many cases up your way.
I know you have, so the question then becomes, to what extent did that political dynamic impact it?
It was huge. You had the DEP up there that were part of the conspiracy. This was clearly a RICO kind of situation. They were part of the cover up. You actually had people working for the DEP and the EPA that were part of the cover up. Everybody believes. I mean, let's call it what it is. They believe Manchin, for example, is this wonderful Democrat. Well, Manchin, not only in this case, but a case that I tried up there, I think it was about 10 years ago, where you had an entire city, Spelter, West Virginia, where, you know, people were dying like flies because DuPont had created this mountain, a smoke mountain that was spewing toxins all over the entire city. And when we tried to get Manchin to help us with that, he refused. He sided up with a big corporation.
Not at all surprising. I mean, we had to, in a separate issue, we had to shame him into providing state school board money or state school fund money to build a new school for a bunch of children who were going to school every day at the foot of a toxic waste impoundment right next door to a coal preparation plant.
Yeah, I mean, you want to look at him and say, oh, well, he's different because he's a Democrat. He's just like a Wall Street thug, just like the rest of them. I mean, look, I have the advantage of being neither Republican or Democrat, but having done this for 35 years, I can tell you my experience is there is no difference. And that's in the film. You see that all over the film where the EPA is complicit in this entire thing. We got no help from the government, zero. They actually were part of the problem. So the only way we could even get any relief at all for these people was just to keep going to trial, you know, trial and hammering them.
These were test cases. How many test plaintiffs were involved?
There were six test plaintiffs that I had to work with when I got the case, and we tried four of them, and all four, they returned a verdict on all four, and it was bad for the DuPont. Every verdict got worse and worse for DuPont. Maybe the best trial judge, we just happened to be in front of the most talented trial judge in the country, and it was very fortuitous. He was up in Ohio, and, you know, I tried cases in front of federal judges all over the country, and you just happen to have a guy who was brilliant. He understood all the theories. He was even with both sides. We didn't have any advantage. He just, anytime you got a federal judge that has the kind of intellect that Judge Sargas had, then you know, okay, something you can make some you can make some social changes that matter. And, you know, but that's without – he didn't give us any breaks. He just tried the case straight up and let us try the case.
So you've got a, you've got an entire community – for all intents and purposes, you've got an entire series, not just a community, a series of communities who are poisoned.
You had 70,000 people exposed, Bob.
Yeah.
70,000 people that were drinking the water every day while DuPont was telling them it's totally safe. While they were telling the people it was safe, they had literature in their own file cabinets that showed that it caused birth defects and cancer. That was from almost from the very beginning. I mean, by the 1970s, you understand, they were actually removing women from working around C8 because women were showing up with birth defects. And then new management came in and they said, well, we can't do that. We got to put these women back because it looks bad. They phonied up a bunch of literature and a bunch of studies. So they pulled the women away because so many of them were having birth defects. And that's what this film shows, one example of a horrible birth defect that this young man had to live with. And but he was only one of them. And so to talk about how callous they were, they said, okay, well, let's remove these women away from this toxin because we know that it obviously causes birth defects. It caused birth defects in monkeys. It caused cancer in monkeys. Let me just tell you this, Bob. It was so bad. The fear of birth defects was so bad that the company who invented this stuff, 3M, they said, we're no longer going to sell it because we have a responsibility to the community not to sell it. So after they said that, DuPont said, well, okay, you won't sell it. We'll manufacture it ourselves. So 3M got out of the business because they were afraid of the birth defects. They were afraid of the cancer. And they said, we can't do this to communities. We have a responsibility. So they got out of it, and DuPont then said, oh, well, that's okay. We'll start manufacturing it ourselves. So they built a $25 million plant, started making the stuff themselves.
When you're dealing with 70,000 exposed people who are wondering if the next doctor visit is going to be the one where the doctor looks at them and says, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, you've got cancer.
Well, they need to be aware of that.
Yeah, yes, but how can the law even begin to try to attempt to make that right?
It can't, Bob. I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, there's no way. I mean, I try the biggest cases in America. I mean, my God, we handled the tobacco litigation. I'm heading up the opioid litigation. I mean, I know what big litigation is. There's only so much you can solve with litigation. Until people are perp walked in this country, until you have these cats that, you know, they sit on a board and they're CEO of the company making $600 million a year, and you say, you know, you kill people, you got a responsibility. We can show that you knew what was going on. In this situation, the CEO of the company knew what was going on, and there was no secret here.
Is there a statute of limitations attached to any potential criminal charge? Is this something that could be remedied in the future?
No, that's my point. Eric Holder could have had him dead to rights. He had it. Same thing that he did on opioids to y'all up in West Virginia. I mean, my God, they unloaded more opioids and killed more people in West Virginia than anybody in America. Well, I took the depositions in those cases. I got them to admit that they knew what they were doing, that they knew that their numbers were way out of whack. And it's just nothing short of murder. Well, you know what? Again, what does Eric Holder do? It gives him a pass. Nobody goes to prison. Nobody takes a perp walk. How do you ever change culture? You can't change it by me going to trial and getting a jury verdict for $5, $6, $7, $20 million. That doesn't change anything. This is the cost of doing business for them, Bob.
Yeah, there's. $20 million.
If they're making $2 billion a year, who cares if they paid us by the time it's all over about $1 billion. That's nothing to them. It doesn't change anything. It's a cost of doing business. They work it right into their business plan and say, yeah, we can afford to pay $1 billion because we're going to make $20 billion.
And the environment in which they operate, I mean, they're in West Virginia for a reason. as we touched on a little bit ago.
Well, they're in West Virginia because y'all let them get away with everything.
Right.
I mean, my God, you just say, well, it smells like money. If it's a job, it smells like money. Well, at some point, you got to say, no, it smells like you're killing my children.
Exactly.
At some point, people got to speak up, and they got to say it can't be immediate gratification. You got to say, I got children. I got grandchildren. This decision I'm making is bad for them. It's all this selfish notion of, and so, but it's not just West Virginia. I mean, believe me, it's not just West Virginia.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Everybody says, it's Alabama, Mississippi. It came down, it's like the carpetbaggers came down from the Northeast, and they said, well, we don't have to go to a third world country. We'll simply go to the Deep South, and we'll, you know, that's the same thing as a third world country in the way we pay and treat these people. They're not unionized. We're not going to, you know, we don't have to really worry about anything. Why go to China when we go to West Virginia or Mississippi or Alabama or Louisiana?
And it's probably cheaper. Cheaper to buy the government in Alabama than it is to buy it in China.
Of course it is. Of course it is. So you've got, you know, it's a cultural problem that's not unique to West Virginia. I love the people in West Virginia. I mean, it breaks my heart every time I get called to have to handle another one of these cases up there. I'm looking at two of them right now, and I'm just.
Well, you know, I've spent a lot of, and you know, your colleague Bobby and I talked about this. I've spent the last 20 years of my life working against the coal industry.
I know you have. I know what you've done.
And you know, for me to have watched this film, you know, we bandy the word trigger around. And this film just triggered the daylights out of me, because everything that you were dealing with along the Ohio River is essentially going on in southern West Virginia as well in relation to the mountaintop removal stuff. And
you're right.
We've done everything.
Here's what you really need to be afraid of, okay? There's a... What's happening in the legal profession now is there's me, Bobby Kennedy, you know, Brockovich. We're dinosaurs. I mean, there's only so many of these cases that we got in us. After a while, you say, well, somebody's got to pick it up. They're not, but they're not picking it up. You don't have a vast new bunch of young trial lawyers saying, yeah, I'm gonna pick this up and I'm gonna do something with it. That's scary. First of all, you don't. In the entire country, what, you got 800,000 or 700,000 lawyers? You got 0.0003% of them that are even trial lawyers that can even take on these kind of companies. By the time I was done with DuPont, the first case that I tried in Spelter, West Virginia, I was $12 million into that case. If I'd have lost that case, I'd have lost $12 million. In the community, we never would have been made whole. This case is similar. So you just gotta. It's a whole witch's brew that's coming down on places like West Virginia right now. I mean, when I get to the point where I'm getting 10, you know, I get 10 calls a year for just West Virginia, where every one of the cases I look at are just tragic. But I mean, I've got probably one of the best law firms in America, by far the premier law firm in America. And when all my trial lawyers are saying, I can't do anymore. You know, it's gotten so bad we can't even keep up with it.
Is it,
that's the problem.
Is part of that because the law school process itself is so damnably expensive that when a new lawyer comes out, they can't afford to do anything but go to work for some big old defense firm? Or is it an attitude thing?
It's not. I don't know how to describe it. The idea of, young kid come out of law school, most of them don't even have a clue on how to try a lawsuit because they don't teach that in law school anymore. It's all, you know what law school is about now? It's preparing people to write briefs for big defense firms. That's what law school is.
I heartily agree. You know, when I came out, I said the one thing they didn't teach me in 3 years of law school was how to run a law office.
Exactly. So it's getting worse, and you know. So I'm concerned about it. I'm concerned from a cultural standpoint. I'm gonna, you know, I have probably one of the biggest training seminars in America called MTMP that we do in Las Vegas twice a year, and we bring in the best trial lawyers in the country. But used to, you know, about 1,200 lawyers show up, but out of 1,200 lawyers, you'd only want about 30 of them actually trying a case for you. So my goal is to improve that, is to try to get it to where people are saying, yeah, I'll take on that project. I'll take on DuPont or Exxon or J&J or whoever, you know. But, you know, the film that – this film is so sobering. This film, to me, if you watch this film and understand that there typically is not a Disney ending to any of these things. There's not a Disney ending. Because people, even after I finish that case, people are still going to die. Women are still going to have birth defects. And you still have people in West Virginia say, I'm not really worried about it until it happens to them. And it's their family, and it's their child, or their husband and wife.
Well,
and that's the nature. That's how people think about these things.
And you've got to somehow or another. And I understand what you say that you know a bunch of lawsuits is never going to stop it because you can't hurt them enough.
You got to put them in jail, and they got plenty to put them in jail with. We just don't have any politicians that have any damn courage. You know, remember Obama coming into office? I'm gonna round those people up on Wall Street for stealing $3 trillion from the American economy back in 2008. We're gonna do something about it. You know what he did?
Nothing.
Zero.
Yeah.
You know how many of them went to prison? You know how many investigations were even started? Zero.
Exactly. I mean, I've spent a lot of time up there.
So this is the best, and right there in West Virginia with this case against DuPont, you could not, any prosecutor with a brain could have landed this case. Somebody could have gone to prison, and years from now, somewhere in an MBA school, they'd be talking about Bob made a bad decision. He thought he could make money, but he ended up in prison. And that story would be told again and again in MBA school. But as it is, no, Bob took a risk. He made $20 billion, and it only cost him $1 billion. So Bob made, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's a Horatio Alger success story.
Of course, it's just like the Pinto case out of California.
Oh yeah,
you know they knew Pinto cases. They knew the car was blowing up and people were burning to death in their car. They had about 17 in a row, and they calculated how many people they could kill by burning them to death with an exploding gas can. And they said, well, we're making X number of dollars a year. Why should we worry about paying out this money? Because we're still ahead. So they kept the car on the market, and the government let them do it.
In a way, though, I mean, you say there's no Disney happy ending, and there isn't. There's no Disney happy endings in West Virginia or a lot of these other states that you described. But to a certain extent, it's still a victory of some sort, though, isn't it? I mean...
Well, I think it's a moral victory, but moral victories don't move the clock. There's got to be, you've got to have, I don't mean to sound so dogmatic about it, but you're talking to somebody who's tried the biggest cases in America from L.A. to New York for 30 years. And the only thing that moves it, the only thing these MBA CEOs cares about is they might go to prison. And when you have politicians, both Democrat and Republican, who don't have the guts to put him in prison, then this repeats itself generation to generation. Do you realize that this is probably going to surprise you, but during the SNL crisis, Ronald Reagan put 800 bankers in prison. Okay?
Yep.
Now think about that. Here, the arch conservative put 800 bankers in prison for stealing money from mom and pop. You know, that hasn't been repeated since. And so that's the problem. I mean, we could sit here and we could go through this interview for 3 hours and we would still land in the same place. Nothing changes until we have an attorney general that is willing to say, you know what, my DOJ is going to do something about it. And that's the only thing that's going to change.
Does the EPA have a role in this at all? I mean,
of course, the EPA, as far as your West Virginia problem, both in West Virginia, the Spelter case that I handled up there, the EPA was at fault. In this case, the EPA was at fault. They gave them a free pass. Why? Because they go here's how it works. Joe is an investigator for EPA. Joe has been assigned the C8 case. He's supposed to do the investigation of DuPont. Well, they say DuPont calls Joe and they say, well, here's this material. Oh, by the way, Joe, how many more years are you going to stay with the EPA? Because we want to offer you a job where we pay you $350,000. And oh, by the way, you know, we're really not that bad. I hope you give us a break on this case. That's exactly how it works. Whether it's the FDA, it works like that. The EPA, it works like that. The SEC, it works like that. The average man average person out there to get a fair shake is impossible, Bob. And I don't mean to sound like such a cynic, but you know, you do this for as long as I've done it, and it repeats itself, whether it's West Virginia or Florida or Alabama, Georgia. It doesn't make any difference. I've been in courtrooms more than most lawyers you'll talk to in a lifetime. I don't think it'd be rare that you find a lawyer we're not talking about, and I'm talking about cases just like the DuPont case. I'm not talking about auto injury cases. I'm talking about big, complex cases like DuPont. And, you know, I take it all the way back to the asbestos days. Ron Motley up there in South Carolina, and we were some of the first people trying asbestos cases. And, you know, we saw the same history there in West Virginia. It was really bad.
I've been told that you know, there's another DuPont plant down on the Kanawha River at roughly Bell, West Virginia. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
Long, long ago, I went to visit another lawyer's daddy, and he asked me to sit down and talk with him. And he had worked for DuPont for eons, and he told me this horrifying story about how they would just take truckloads of asbestos and drive it up the holler across the road and dump it behind a mountain.
I'm very familiar with that.
When I met him, I mean, it was heartbreaking because his hands were twisted into claws from what it had done to him over the years. And
just handled it, yeah. Well, no, God knows what it did to his lungs.
And, well, he died shortly thereafter. But I understand. I really, really, really get your fury, and I understand your frustration, because these are people whose lives are just thrown away.
Well, what we've done, look, capitalism is the best system in the world. I'm convinced, but it has to work. It has to work with regulation, and it has to work with punishment. If you take regulation and retribution out of the capitalism system, it doesn't work, and that's what we've done. Okay, there is no retribution. The real retribution is throw these folks in prison. That's gone. We don't even have that possibility anymore. And so, you know, unless capitalism, it can work, but you've got to have regulatory and retribution, and regulatory is a joke. I mean, EPA, everybody's saying, oh, my God, Trump is destroying the EPA. Really? Trump is not – the EPA has been dysfunctional for 20 years. I mean, EPA is useless. It's a useless entity. So, no, Trump is – yeah, he's making it sound like it's worse, but it's not. They just dress up different. I mean, you know, they're same people. They just change parties for a little while.
Well, you know, we watched for years as they hollered here in West Virginia about the Obama job-killing anti-coal EPA. And I would look at people and say, you can't possibly believe that, because they've never done a damn thing. You know, I've been in the offices. I've begged. I've pleaded. I've seen women and children weep in front of regulators. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so let me ask you this as we wrap up, Mike. The film. Once you start it, It pulls you in, and you can't help but just sit there and
It's a brilliant film.
Be overwhelmed with it.
These are award-winning filmmakers, man. I've been out to Sundance on a few documentaries that have been involved my cases, and this is one where, I mean, these people are regarded as the best in the business. And so that's what you had. You had the best filmmakers in the business following this documentary there for you in West Virginia. it was so good that Sundance, well over 100 films, I think. And they had, every year they pick three that Sundance is actually going to jump behind and help promote. And this is one of the three. And they feel like they have to do that out of a sense of social responsibility, because the quality of the film is so good.
Well, that's my question. When if you had your druthers, Mike, when people watch this film, they're going to be as furious I don't know how you can't be. So where do they take it after that? Is there an ask? Is there an activism angle?
That's the horrible part about it. The ask on this is just to be more politically astute, to say, to be willing to jump and to be willing to, first of all, not to be tribal about your politics. Okay, that's the first thing. What I mean by that is, you know, Manchin's your guy up there. You know, his daddy was a politician. He's a politician. He's a fraud. So the first thing is to be honest about what you're working with. We're always looking for a hero, Bob. People looking at politicians are always looking for a hero. They're always looking for that person who's going to pull the sword out of the stone and everything's going to be okay. Manchin ain't that guy. Okay. So that's
not by a long shot.
Yeah, so the first thing is to understand that and understand how badly they're being hurt by this notion of political tribalism. There's no politician that I've ever had any kinship with, and I feel good about that. I mean, I respect the ones that are respectable, but this idea of us creating this image of, well, I'm a Democrat and everything Democrat does, or I'm a Republican, everything Republican does, that is so destructive, man. I mean, it's just so destructive. So it begins there, and it begins being objective and honest about what's really happening here. And sometimes you may agree with them with one thing, and you and there'll be 20 things that they're horrible about. So you got to hold these politicians responsible, man. There are no heroes. And in this Manchin cat, sure, it ain't a hero. You know, he's just another... You know, he's another Wall Street Democrat.
Well, exactly. And I was talking with a good friend the other night, and I said it would be nice to be in a state where you can get excited about a candidate, because I'm probably never going to have that luxury in West Virginia.
Not unusual, Bob. I mean, it's most states.
Sitting
here talking about it, I'm thinking, well, where is that person?
Well, in this case, it was Beto O'Rourke. But again, it's because the other side, we don't measure people by their individual merits. We measure them based upon their relative lack of odiousness compared to the other guy.
Yeah.
The other guy in this case
Ted Cruz. You know, Bobby, as you know, is my dear friend. But I mean, both he and I would laugh about the idea. Well, here they are equating Beto with being a Kennedy. I mean, as if there's something magic about that. Well, Bobby will admit there's nothing magic about being a Kennedy. It's just who you are. So, but there's this notion that we can't objectively get past.
Exactly. And you know, you mentioned the opioid.
Camelot. There is no Camelot. Camelot was a story. That's all.
Yeah. You mentioned the opioid litigation a minute ago. And in talking about Manchin, you know, again, that's another one of those moments, Mike.
Tell me about. I'm the guy. I'm taking the discovery deposition. I'll try the first case in West Virginia. I'm going to try the case in West Virginia. You'll see me up there doing that. So I'm taking the depositions. Manchin.
We've got
the opportunity to close them down years ago.
Yeah, but we've got an opioid lobbyist who's running against it.
I know all about it. The wife of your attorney general there was, you know, she's being paid by the industry while your attorney general's making the sweetheart deal for $25 million in exchange for nothing, so he can declare a victory. I mean, it's pathetic. It was 25, maybe it's 50 million. I don't know. It was nothing. The company made more money than that while you and I have been talking on the telephone.
Exactly. And
so that's the problem. Until people can say, I want something real, they're going to get exactly what they got till they can say, I want something real.
Well, it is the sad truth, and the only way around it is to, as you say, be more aware and pay attention, and don't let people run over you. We've gone door to door explaining the cancer studies and the birth defect studies with regard to mountaintop removal. And
I know the studies pretty well.
Yeah, and the blank looks that you get. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But I need a job. And, well, you're not going to work very well when you're dead, or the 300,000 people who are participating in an involuntary long-term epidemiological study on the effects of methyl cyclohexane methanol on human body systems because they opened their tap.
Yeah. Well, look, good luck with that, Bob.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Mike. Thank you so very much.
Is your podcast? Is this radio?
It's internet radio. We're live right now, and it'll go up as a podcast as soon as the program's over.
Well, good.
And
good luck with all of it. Okay, stay in touch, man.
Absolutely.
I'll see you up there when I'm signing that opioid case.
Well, yeah. Have them give me a holler. I'd love to come by and see a little bit of it.
You're invited.
All right. Thank you, Mike Papantonio. Take care. And again, the name of the film is The Devil We Know. And it is available tomorrow. It's available tomorrow online. Like I said, and like Mike said, it ain't going to be easy, but it's well worth the watch. So go to thedevilweknow.com. You can also get it on iTunes. And like Mike said, be more self-aware. And, I mean, the mansion thing, Jesus Christ. But then again, you know this program. You have listened for, this is not the Joe Manchin fan club. It's just a hell of a thing facing what we've got on the ballot here. And I didn't really have time to get into it. But the other thing, as far as West Virginia is concerned, with regard to Trump and all of that, I've said we've been in a constitutional crisis since January the 20th, 2017. Well, guess what? West Virginia is in a sure enough constitutional crisis. Because our court system has been to the extent that you can get any justice out of a court whatsoever, our court system has been destroyed on a purely political, ham-fisted attempt to clear out by the Republican legislature to clear out some of its political enemies. For all intents and purposes, we don't have a legitimate Supreme Court right now. The two people that were selected by Jim Justice are not legitimate. What a damn mess. And meanwhile, people die. People are poisoned. Babies are born behind the eight ball with one foot in a bucket, because it was more profitable to poison them than to let them have a fair shot in life. No gimmies, just a shot. I know. So we do have a lot more. We got a lot more stuff to go through on this More In Monday. But I tell you what, having watched the film a couple of times, it's kind of hard to shift gears and just say, okay, let's go talk about something else. You know what I mean? So consequently, if you've got something on your mind, well, the program's live. You can call in. You know that. By the way, I was talking with Mike and Kathy Malloy over the weekend, and they expect to be back on the air tonight. having gone almost nonstop trying to get trying to deal with that nightmare. But they expect to be back tonight, so this program we won't have to cut it short. But the phone numbers, of course, area code 304-574-8178, 304-640-2829. Toll free from anywhere in Canada, the United States, Mexico, 844-843-4676. And jump right in on that if you need us to pay the freight. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. And we'll see what's on folks' minds. Hey, look, it's our buddy Hung Like Jesus. Hey, man. Oh, lost you. Let's see. I'm like, Jesus just said I'm pissed off and I shouldn't be talking like that, so I changed my mind. Oh, I know the feeling. I know the feeling. And remember, Julius Geezer was down in Florida, in Georgia today. And by the way, we are at 11 years and 356 days. 55. 11 years and three, I had to make the announcement, 11 years and 355 days to get our shit together on climate change. Just, you know, trying to keep track. Well, Hung Like Jesus changed his mind. What's up, man?
Hey, Bob. No, I'm gonna, for me, it's just, it's been simple for so long as to why they do the things they do to us. And, you know, and I'm sure all of us know it and just won't go ahead and just step through that door and realize it and do something about it. They keep us at each other's throat, you know, just constantly with just BS. This one is black and this one is white, or this one's got a brand new car and this one doesn't. They keep us tied up in so much just bullshit, just constantly, till we have no time to deal with the real stuff that's going on in the back door back here. And I just see it constantly every day, and it just irks the hell out of me. People are just so simple-minded. We can't just pop these rivets of bullshit and just focus on the country as a whole moving ahead. The people in office, they don't give a shit about us. I don't give a damn what color they represent. They do not give a damn about me. Not on a daily basis, they don't.
Well, for the most part, you know what color they represent? Green.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Black, not brown, not white. Green.
And it irks me. And we just will not get over this. The stuff, the little shit that they put in front of us that keeps us tied up in just garbage, we will not get past it.
Well, when Pap talks about being kind of apolitical, not in love with either party, I get that. Because the work that I've done, you know, relative to mountaintop removal, when we got the bill, the AIC Act, introduced in the House of Representatives, and we've been working for, Jesus, 6 years now trying to get it introduced in the Senate, and we still can't do it. And you know why that is? I mean, you could say because it's a Republican Senate. Okay, sure. But the fact of the matter is, it's Democrats. We can't get it introduced in the Senate because of Democrats. Because a Democrat in California doesn't want to offend Joe fucking Manchin. Okay? Mm-hmm. A Democrat in Vermont doesn't want to offend Joe Manchin. A Democrat in Rhode Island doesn't want to offend Joe Manchin.
It's just, you know, it's just, you know, and I am fairly convinced that Donald Trump was put in place to keep us in the just keep knee deep and just BS. It's no telling what the hell is going on in the country now. With Donald Trump and his BS keeps us, I mean, they could be, it's no telling what the hell is actually going on right now. Because, you know, when they got these headlines, you got to pay attention to the back page, because that's what's happening. And there's no telling, like I said, there's no telling what's actually going on right now. I mean, it's just a circus. It's an absolute cartoon.
Well, it is, and there are some of these things, and I freely admit it, I do. Some of it's, I mean, we do More in Monday, and we focus on, you know, goofy, crazy, dumbass, ignorant, mean-spirited, right-wing bullshit.
Right. I mean, what can you do?
But you know, that's because, you know, maybe it makes us feel a little bit better.
Yes.
But in the final analysis, you know, because we get to go, oh, look, we're not stupid like they are. But for the past 8 days, I can't get past this IPCC report. I just can't.
I don't think it's getting the attention that it deserves.
No, it's
the rest of the radio, you don't hear anything about it.
Well, look who owns. Look who owns the radio.
Right.
You're not going to hear much about this report on a radio. One, radio news is almost dead.
Right.
But you're not going to hear much about this report on a radio station that's owned by some right wing consortium or some right wing billionaire.
It's a joke still. It's still something that doesn't exist to them. It's just funny. It's something, you know. And Donald Trump said it'll reverse itself. That's what he said last night.
Oh no, that's why I said. I mean, I was watching along, and the next thing I knew, you know, I was contemplating tearing at my hair and running in the yard and you know, chase eating dirt and running rabbits. it's the climate will reverse itself, or then hey, what? There's this one. Well, there are other reports that say the climate is fabulous.
Right.
And,
or the one that questioned a few years ago, all the planets in the solar system are heating up. So it's just, you know, it's just something that happens.
But, sunspots, you know, sunspots. Yeah, it's got to be sunspots. But the thing is that nobody's, I don't know, maybe you can't brief him, hung like Jesus. Maybe you just flat can't brief him. And I wouldn't be surprised by that, because one of the things he trotted out was, well, you know, the climate may change and then they change back. You know, like, I don't know, like the way melanoma puts her clothes on and then takes them off for somebody else. But the fact of the matter is, he cited, and I'm not sure it's all man-made. Well, that proves he doesn't know what's in the report, because the report says not only are human beings responsible for all the warming from 1950 forward, we are responsible for all the warming from 1850 forward. Yes. All of it.
The Industrial Revolution is when it, you know, hey. But listen, the C8s, I want to get to this right quick. Because, you know, I heard something, this has been a few years ago, that, you know, they'll say this is a West Virginia thing, but this thing is, I would say worldwide. They were putting this stuff in those, and everyone probably has this in their cupboards right now, the Teflon pots.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody has that in their system. Everybody. Whether you even use them or not, I think you may have it going on somewhere. It's just not a West Virginia thing. It's just not a Southern thing.
Right, and remember, you can't cook in it at high heat, and you cannot use metal utensils to stir in the pot, because when you do that, you're stirring some Teflon into your dinner.
Right.
And then I think I think about all the times that I've used Teflon tape in plumbing.
Yes.
But then again, in a sacrifice zone like West Virginia. Hell, breathing is a semi-suicidal act.
You know, I was having lunch. It was this probably last year sometime. And it was some fast food, you know, just something real quick. And I brought it back and sat in the break room with everybody else. And I was sitting, you know, people go around, you know, what are you eating? You don't even know what that is. You're eating. What is that? I mean, fast food. I mean, you know, honestly and truly, if you're not growing it out of the ground yourself, you don't know what it is that you're eating. And even if you are growing it out of the ground, you don't know what it is, because you don't know what's already in the ground. You don't know what's coming out of the sky. So just forget about it. And the fast foods, I mean, if you're overweight, you might not want to have it. You got high cholesterol, you might not want to have it. But outside of that, as far as anything being contaminated with chemicals, anything like that, just please, just save it. Because if you step outside, you probably will drop dead.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, I told the story before about my my colleague who lived under a mountaintop removal operation here in West Virginia. And he noticed that the apples, you know, the apples were coming ripe. And, you know, they're the old Appalachian apples that are kind of green, and they got black spots on them.
Right.
But they're great apples.
Right.
So he noticed, he pulls one, and it's got this gritty, greasy film on it.
Right.
Well, that's fallout from the explosives, and the U.S. Geological Survey was doing some testing down there at the time. And he said, hey, and what is this? And they sent it to the lab and wrote back and said, you know, it'd take too long to, you know, go all the way. But don't eat them. Do not eat them. Don't eat anything that grows in a garden there.
Jesus. That's why, you know, and you don't want to be... You don't want to be too pessimistic. You don't want to be a fatalist. But, you know, honestly, come on. Seriously, do we even know? Do we know what we already have already?
No. And because it's like I said, talking with Pap. You know, there's that one, you know, assuming people can go to the damn doctor. There's that one day you walk in there.
That's another hurdle.
Yeah.
Getting to the doctor.
Right. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had blood work done. I'm uninsured, and I got to pay cash for every doctor's appointment and every blood draw and every prescription. And so you try to do as little as you possibly can.
And that's a racket. It's a racket both coming and going.
Sure. So, you know, but assuming you get to the doctor because, you know, something hurts or something ain't right. Then they look at you and say, well, it's this or it's that. And if you're awake in the world, you go, well, I wonder which corporation gave me that.
Right. Right.
So it's, no, I mean, you're right to be outraged. And,
you know,
and it's okay to be, it's okay.
You know, and the thing about it is, you know, I get pissed off and it does nothing. You know, I get pissed off and I'm not pissed off again. I get pissed off. And I mean, you know. It's channeled nowhere because I don't know where to channel because there's so many channels, you know. And I started a thing at work to get everybody registered. And, you know, it didn't matter what party or what your affiliation was. It's, you know, just please just register and just go vote. And if you don't have a ride to vote, I have a two seater. I was gonna rent the van down here at the U-Haul, and I was gonna who couldn't make it to the poll. I was gonna pick everybody up. We were gonna go to the polls who wanted to go. Everybody who registered. But that fell through because people just don't care. The dude told me it doesn't affect, you know, what they do. It doesn't affect me.
Right. That's the essential problem with the climate change situation. You can't step out your door for the most part and go, oh, look, there's some climate change.
Right.
But then the next thing you know, you're talking to some of the old timers down at the gas station. And they're like, I ain't never seen it be this wet in October.
Right.
And you go, you know, wonder why
I'm
that is.
I'm 51 years old. I'm 51, excuse me, I didn't cut you off, but I'm 51 years old. I'd spend my summers in South Carolina, rural South Carolina. The weather then is a whole lot different than it is now. And I can't really put my finger on it. The storms were, we didn't have as many, but they were different. I mean, the seasons to me seemed different. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's just my imagination, me wanting to believe it, me wanting to see it, but it's just, you know, it's something different about it.
Oh, I've seen it here. I've seen it growing up in Alabama. But you can't look at it, there's no way you can argue to someone, you know, there, it's real. It's happening to you.
Right.
And so at the risk of being a little ray of sunshine, you know, this may be the perfect storm that does humanity in. I don't know.
Well, I think it would be high time. Just know, you know, a wake-up call is, I think, is due. I don't want to be a fatalist, and I hate to sound like that. But you know what else? What else is left? I mean, if you're not going to do nothing, you know, just sit back and just wait on it.
Yeah, you know, right. The giant asteroid 2018. Come on already.
But you know, the thing about it is, whatever happens, whatever happens to wipe humans off the planet, the Earth will be here. It will bounce back. In that case, Donald Trump is right. I mean, over hundreds of years it'll take, it will bounce back. But we won't witness it.
No, there's an open question as to whether it does bounce back once the feedback loop gets going strongly enough.
Maybe
the 6 foot tall race of sentient cockroaches who worship us as gods in, you know, a couple of million years or so, but it ain't us. And again, you know, I'm unabashedly pro-human.
You know, I used to be, but I'm, you know, I think in my old age, I'm getting cynical and I'm getting a tad bit hateful, I guess. But I see us not doing anything. So, you know, I figure, you know, I don't want to do anything. And I don't want to be that way. That's why I didn't want to call in, because I was pissed off and I didn't want to talk to you. I was pissed off because I say crazy things.
Yeah, but see, you're better already, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Well, I tell you what, hung like Jesus, man. I appreciate the phone call and I enjoyed the conversation. I did.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me vent.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You take care now.
Thank you.
Bye. It's our buddy Hung Like Jesus. Both lines are open. If you want to jump in, I think I missed a call a moment ago. My bad. But if you want to jump into the conversation, you're mighty welcome so to do. Speaking of things environmental, they had a vote this past Thursday over in the Senate. It was a confirmation vote. Nah, there wasn't. Nobody was standing up. To the best of my knowledge, nobody was standing up to screaming or anything. Nah, it was just another day when the Senate didn't take the crisis that we face seriously. How do I know? Because Jeffrey Bossert Clark. Never heard of him, did you? Well, there's a reason you weren't supposed to. But Jeffrey Bossert Clark, a lawyer, is now the Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice Environment and Natural Resources Division. So there's an Environment and Natural Resources Division of the DOJ. You'd think that they would be, you know, focused on protecting the environment and so forth. No. How do I know? Because Jeffrey Bossert Clark was the lawyer who defended BP after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Oil disaster. He came from a highfalutin law firm called Kirkland & Ellis. And he's been nominated since 2017. But the full Senate didn't vote on his nomination before the 2017 ended, so they had to. Julius Geiser had to renominate him. And it's going to be, remember, he was the lawyer who defended BP after the Deepwater Horizon man-made oil disaster. And he's going to be in charge of enforcing the what? Yeah, the Clean Water Act. He's also going to be in charge of enforcing the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Air Act. Those criminal penalties that Pap was talking about. He's the guy that's in charge of both civil and criminal cases involving corporations and individuals who might violate, say, the Clean Air Act, or the Clean Water Act, or the Safe Drinking Water Act, and all the other federal environmental laws. And you know how Mike was talking about basically what a shitbird Joe Manchin is? Guess what? The confirmation vote was 52-45. Nobody was banging on Joe Manchin's door telling him to vote no on the guy who defended BP after BP poisoned the Gulf of Mexico. No. There were no signs, there were no chants, there were no speeches in elevators. And Joe Manchin quietly went about the business of voting with the Republicans, as did Claire McCaskill out of Missouri, leading it to a 52-45 tally. And so I get what Mike Papantonio was talking about when he said that, you know, they're just different flavors. And yeah, I really do. I get that. In the sort of macro sense. But damn, this character, wow. He had his confirmation hearings all the way back in 2017. Dianne Feinstein asked him straight up, "Do you believe that greenhouse gases are a threat to Americans' health and safety?" She asked him that question time after time after time after time. He wouldn't answer. He refused to answer. Now, if you built some sort of a sealed room and you put Jeffrey Bossert Clark, formerly of Kirkland and Ellis, in it, and you pumped it full of smog, he might reach a less demure answer to the question. Because then it would be that those gases would be deleterious to his health and safety. But until it is, fuck all y'all, he's got his. And to the extent that we go, oh, well, yeah, Trump, uh-uh. He was an assistant attorney general in that same division of the DOJ back during the reign of error under Dim Leader. And then he went, to the private sector. 11 Louisiana parishes, you know, Louisiana has parishes, not counties. 11 Louisiana parishes sued BP. He killed all those claims. He defeated all those claims. In the Deepwater Horizon case, when there was a massive damage award, well, he was lead counsel on that. Jesus. So, just another day, right? Here's Jeffrey Bossert Clark. Nah, that's too deep to get into. Hey, look, he's a friend of the, what? Federalist Society, of course he is. Speaking to the Federalist Society back in 2010, 8 long years ago, he said efforts to, and this is, this is the kind of shit that they love at the Federalist Society. He said that trying to cut back on greenhouse gases were, and this is a quote, reminiscent of kind of a Leninistic program from the 1920s to seize control of the commanding heights of the economy. He said that the EPA was overly ambitious. This is, of course, pure bullshit. It's an overly ambitious agenda, and it needs to be checked by judicial review. Huh, how about that? That's the very sort of judicial review that Brat Kavanaugh used. Mm-hmm. So, Ken Cook of the Environmental Working Group, he's the president there, he said, the guy who defended the company that caused the worst oil spill in U.S. history is not likely to aggressively go after corporate environmental outlaws. Meanwhile, Tom Carper of Delaware, senator, said, the person serving in this position must uphold and enforce our nation's environmental laws without reservation or ideology. However, his, Jeffrey Bossert Clark's record shows him, this is another quote, shows him to have strong opposition to critical environmental protections, including EPA's efforts to curb climate change, using best available science in policymaking and safety requirements for offshore oil and gas operations. The American people expect and deserve much better from the nation's top environmental lawyer. But we were talking about Chlamydia Claudius's approach to the IPCC report. Let's play fun with the art of word knowing, shall we? Here's the question that was asked of him. Have you read the UN report this week warning about climate change requiring drastic action? Okay? That's the question. Here's his answer.
I want to look at who drew it. You know, which group drew it. Because I can give you reports that are fabulous, and I can give you reports that aren't so good.
How interesting. He answered a question that wasn't asked of him. If we would play Jeopardy here, the question to that is, what do you think about the drafting of the report?
Yeah, I want to look at who drew it, you know, which group drew it, because I can give you reports that are fabulous and I can give you reports that aren't so good.
Nowhere in there is there any indication whatsoever that he has read the first word of the summary, the executive summary.
I want to look at who drew it.
Well, what's to look at? It's not like it's a secret. It's right there on the front page. It's by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And all the authors are listed. Jesus. Every country in the world, including the United States, signed off on the precise wording of the document. And they signed off on it during Geezer Disgustus's reign. Am I missing something here? No, I don't think I am, and I don't think you are either. So, but it's not just him, of course. Oh, no. When he sat down last night, well, I mean, not last night, but when he sat down for his interview with 60 Minutes, well, this was the babble about climate change.
Want to give trillions and trillions of dollars. I don't want to lose millions and millions of jobs. I don't want to be put at a disadvantage.
I wish you could go to Greenland. watch these huge chunks of ice just falling into the ocean, raising the...
You know, fuck Greenland. I don't have any hotels there. Fuck them.
Sea levels.
And you don't know whether or not that would have happened with or without man. You don't know.
Well, your scientists at NOAA and NASA.
No, we have scientists that disagree with that.
You know, I was thinking...
No, you don't, dumbass. You signed off, or they, in your name, signed off on this report.
What if he said, no, I've seen the hurricane situations. I've changed my mind. There really is climate change. And I thought, wow, what an impact. What an impact that would make.
I'm not denying climate change.
Oh, no.
But it could very well go back. You know, we're talking about over millions of years. They say that we...
Yeah, that's denying it. It could go back. Yeah, that's what it boils down to. James in Illinois says, draft report, there may be Democrats involved. Yeah. But listen carefully to this answer. Jesus Christ.
I'm not denying climate change.
Yeah, you are.
But it could very well go back. You know, we're talking about over millions of years. They say that we had hurricanes that were far worse than what we just had with Michael.
Who says that? They say.
I mean, people say that in the...
Yeah, but what about the scientists who say it's worse than ever?
You'd have to show me the scientists because they have a very big political agenda, Leslie.
I can't bring them in.
Scientists also have a political agenda.
I thought that funny. I thought scientists had a science agenda. Too many agendas to keep up with, you know? So, he's not going to do anything. His administration's not going to do anything. So that means that states like California have to try to do something. And we individually have a choice in what we can try to do. Try to make some sort of an impact. Because after all, again, we are 11 years and 356 days from cancel Christmas. Janet Redmond is the USA Climate Director for Greenpeace. She said, if Trump's comments denying climate science were made by some guy muttering on a street corner, it would be easy to dismiss them as the ravings of a delusional crank. Tragically, this is the President of the United States, and his willful ignorance will have profound costs measured in lives and dollars lost by American families. Yeah, he went on to say, I don't think it's a hoax. Because, remember, he said it's a hoax, it's a Chinese hoax. But I don't know that it's man-made. But then again, this is a classic example of the fact that there are a lot of things that Donald Trump does not fucking know. And the fact that he doesn't know it's man-made does not change the fact that there's little doubt among no real doubt among the scientific community that it's man-made. Again, 1850, the minute we started industrially burning coal. It was a tweet in 2012 when he said, the concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese in order to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive. So there you go. Hey, let's take a break. We're halfway through the program. Steve in New York kindly put a $25 challenge on the table. He sent a note saying, I'm drafting this email in airplane mode en route to Toronto. When I land, the email will send. I may not be able to tune in tonight. After this, I will institute a month-end Go Bucks $25 month-end challenge. We meet the monthly fundraising. I put in $25 at month's end. signed Steve, currently in the chilly but not yet frozen and snow-covered Ottawa. So thank you, Steve. Thank you for putting that challenge on the table. It is much needed. We have $200 to raise tonight. We got $25 on the challenge on the table, which will hopefully be met. And that'll take us down to only $150 to go tonight. And we've got to finish fundraising for the week so that there can be a November on the horn. Because, let's see here, a week of broadcast, just so we've got something to look forward to. We will, we've got to be finished by the 24th of October. We try to raise $200 a night. So there it is. $25 challenge on the table. If that gets met, then we can start working our way down to from $150, in which case we hopefully will not have some sort of deficit for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Okay, Marty, it's all over. It's all over, Marty. No, my poor suffering brain cells, I can feel them dying because I played the Trump clip. But it's past now. There. All better now. All better. All right, little break. Got anything on your mind? Jump right in if you do. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Those mountains falling, they're getting pushed aside. I can't find that old stream that ran here cool and wide. Seems it's all been covered up by that old mountainside. They're looking for old black coal. I thought my kids found a way to work in these mountain towns. When they found jobs down in the mines underground. But now the jobs and the money and the mountainside are all gone. 'Cause it just takes one machine now to tear a mountain down. Well, you can tear out a mountain, try to wash it down below, but you can't take the heart out of this Appalachian soul. Oh, this Appalachian soul. It's too damn quiet around here. No more coal trucks rolling down. Ghosts in the storefronts. Everybody's left this town. They've gone off to the bright lights in the big city. They got more cash than they can carry around. But I know someday they'll be coming back to this old mountain town. Well, you can tear out a mountain and try to wash it down below, but you can't take the heart out of this Appalachian, Appalachian soul. Oh, this Appalachian, Appalachian too hard to believe. It's
it's just for that old black coal. Wish I could walk beside a cool mountain stream once more. But once it's gone, you know it's gone forevermore. Well, I'm going back, I'm gonna speak my mind. I ain't gonna let them take out no more. Well, you can't tear down a mountain when that mountain's in your soul. Well, you can tear out a mountain and try to wash it down below. But you can't take the heart out of this Appalachian, Appalachian soul. Oh, this Appalachian, Appalachian soul. Oh, this Appalachian, Appalachian soul. Oh, this Appalachian, Appalachian soul.
Twenty-four minutes before the hour, and hey, thank you very kindly to Samson for meeting Steve's challenge. Thank you very much indeed. That means we've only got $150 to raise this evening, so that's huge. Thank you very kindly for helping to keep it all going here. Of course, shifting gears a little bit, the story of Jamal Khashoggi. I've heard Khashoggi. I don't know. But the story of his apparent murder isn't going away, and that's making things rather uncomfortable for the noble, serene, high, majestic graciousness there in the royal house of Ibn Saud. Yeah. Apparently, the Saudis are readying their confession. And, of course, remember, nothing's going to happen to them, at least not if Donald Trump has anything to do with about it, because, they give him money. Emoluments. Lots of emoluments. So why would he do anything to piss him off, right? Because the only thing that matters to him is, well, you know, money. According to CNN, reporting today, a pair of unnamed sources say that The Saudi government is getting ready to say that, well, yeah, we killed him, but we didn't mean to. It was an interrogation that just went wrong, okay? Of course, one has to wonder then, why the 15-person assassination squad that arrived in Turkey was carrying a bone saw, and one of those people was a forensic scientist expert in chopping up dead people. I guess they were planning. I mean, is that like planning ahead for just in case something? Listen, we're just going to ask him a few questions. But if we accidentally kill him, we need to be able to have somebody on hand who can chop him up. Sure. I believe that, don't you? No, me neither. The plan is for it to say that the whole thing was done without the proper clearances. So, you know, a 15-person assassination squad just got on a plane and flew to Istanbul, and nobody, they didn't ask Mother May I to anybody. And, of course, whatever they want, Donald Trump will provide. Jesus, that's sickening. I had a note from Silent R. Lamar. Thanks, Mike Papantonio. Came in late on the phone call with Mike. Just like I said, vote your pocketbook. Your skin in the game. Vote for something real. Yeah. Addressing the issue of jailing some of these corporate killers, Elbert in Rhode Island says, Bob, once they're convicted, those people need to be sent to a real maximum security prison, you know, like the one in Florence, Colorado, not some country club at Maxwell Air Force Base. Real hard time. And, yeah, you do know. Jeff from Hill Hole, Indiana says, I know your pain, man. As many times as I've bashed him here on your show, I have to vote for Joe Donnelly. In Indiana, it's either him or his new pathetic moron, Mike Braun. Those aren't exactly good choices, are they? No. Meanwhile, I had a note from our buddy Todd in South Carolina. I put up some pictures over the weekend. My mental health break is getting out and playing with the smoker when the opportunity presents itself. So I thought I would. I got a smallish brisket and worked it up yesterday. Smoked it all day long, and my neighbor gave me some grape wood, some big like stump type wood stock, and then some big vines. And I sent a couple of the, Todd's not out there on social media, so I sent him a couple of the pictures he'd written me, and I just wrote back, subject line, wooden brisket. Damn, Bob. Wow, great smell-o-vision pictures. You have me cracking up tonight. You look so happy. This new updated weather is really going to be something. I have a Jamaican rub I've been working on. Ooh, I want to hear about that. I want to hear a lot about that. We've all got to do something to try to just try to keep the madness at bay. Because it's just God almighty, it's weird out there. Got a story here about a lawsuit filed by a young woman. Oh, wait, note coming in from Lee in New York. Saudi embassy. Don't you know, Washington Post columnists are dangerous. They have to be afraid because the pen is mightier than the sword. Guess the bone saw is mightier than the pen. You have to have all your options lined up. Murphy's Law strikes when you least expect it. They're some brutal bastards. I saw a tweet from Bill McKibben earlier today. In which he said there are lots of reasons to stop burning oil, but one of them, it would admittedly be nice to not have to deal with the Saudis anymore. Darlene in Connecticut, subject line, is it inappropriate for me to say that what the Saudi government did to that poor man was, barbaric? and that if Trump doesn't do anything, if his State Department doesn't seriously demarche this, that we are, and Trump is, well, you know, barbaric. I don't think that's inappropriate at all, Darlene, because describing barbarians as being barbaric seems downright apropos. And yeah, I get it. We've been doing evil shit in Yemen and we've been helping the Saudis do evil shit in Yemen for a long damn time. Going back, you know, Barack Obama gets no pass for this, just like his administration gets no pass for sitting idly by, as Papantonio was talking about, while people in this state have been poisoned and killed. Because that's what they did. They sat idly by. They didn't give a fuck. At best, they tinkered. They didn't do anything to save lives. Not where mountaintop removal is concerned. No. And that's pretty barbaric. Meanwhile, Trump sent Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point. You have to say that, you know, he's very proud of that. Over to wheedle and kiss and what have you, various and sundry Saudis, probably kiss the king right on the mouth again. I caught a little bit, you know, my dirty little habit in the morning. I caught a little bit of it today. And, you know, there they were talking about the Saudis and Trump, the Saudis and Trump, the Saudis and Trump. And maybe it's a curse to actually have a functioning memory. But I can't get that image out of my head from George W. Bush holding hands with some Saudi royal walking through the Bluebells in Texas and then kissing him right on his mouth eater. When it happened and all the way up to the present moment, I couldn't help thinking that the people who created this country would probably be pretty disgusted by that. Yeah, I'm thinking John Adams would probably have a fucking aneurysm. So yeah, Darlene, they're barbarians, and barbarians do barbaric things, and every now and then they just like to prove it to us because they know that there's a guy in the White House who will not make them pay any penalty, who will not impose any sort of consequences. Because the Saudis think that because of the oil that they pump, that they've got the world by the short and curlies. And to a certain extent, I guess they do. But to what extent, however, on the other side of that equation, is that the rest of the world's fault? Other countries on this planet do take climate change seriously. Other countries on this planet are further along in not needing Saudi oil. But we're not there to the point that we don't need it at all. Most of our imported oil comes from two countries, Mexico and Canada, who, interestingly enough, Donald Trump does everything in his power to piss off. I know this is going to sound a little paranoid, but it almost makes you feel like maybe, what, that he's doing it for the benefit of the Saudis? Does that make sense? You know, what? No, I saw that. I can't let this go. A lawsuit was filed in St. Louis. A young woman named Vanity Allen is suing a hospital there. She went to the emergency room with stomach pains. And you know how it is in an emergency room. You go there and you sit and you wait and you wait and you wait. You can be there hours before you're ever even called back. And so Vanity Allen walked outside to get a little fresh air. It can get kind of stifling in emergency rooms. And that's when a security guard followed her out and tackled her and beat the hell out of her. Bloodied up her face. In the interim since it happened, and there's video of the whole thing, the hospital's security video. This happened back in July at SSM Health DePaul Hospital in Bridgeton. He drags her, the security guard drags her back into the hospital, spins her around, drops her on the ground, and then handcuffs her. Her lawyer's a guy named Albert Watkins. He said this was 220 pounds of white daytime TV muscle on top of her. You have a security guard with an IQ well below room temperature taking it upon himself to see that justice is done to a 90-pound patient in distress. They had installed an IV port on her. That's about all they'd done. She just went outside for fresh air and sat down in a wheelchair outside the entrance. Meanwhile, SSM Health DePaul Hospital filed a police report against Vanity Allen with the Bridgeton Police. She's charged with assault in the fourth degree, I guess, for hitting his fist with her hand or her face. In the meantime, her vision has been impacted. She's scarred. She had no criminal history and got the shit beat out of her by a security guard. If you want to see the video, go to riverfronttimes.com. Video shows SSM hospital security guard taking down patient. It's brutal. What did they think that she would? Why? Did they think she was going to steal the IV port? And, of course, I don't have to mention that Vanity Allen is a young African-American woman. Apparently, the security guard's been fired, but the charges are still pending. Jesus. And then what are we going to call her? Let's call her Apartment April. A young white woman who, no kidding, tried to stop an African-American man from entering his own apartment. And then call the police on him. Yeah. This is, again, St. Louis. KMOV with the story. Darion Toles was trying to go into his apartment Friday night, and apartment April, also a tenant in the same building, was going to walk her dog. That's when she decided to stand in front of his door and demand that he tell her which apartment he lived in. Reasonably and rationally, because that's kind of crazy. He didn't tell her. No, not in front of his door, in front of the doorway to the apartment. He shows her his key fob that, you know, indicates that he lives there. And she then followed him all the way to his apartment door, watched him open the door, and he said, "Have a good night, ma'am. Don't ever do that again. You look pretty stupid." A half hour passes, and the cops show up. Mercifully, Darion Toles is still alive to tell the story. They didn't shoot him or kill him or beat him or anything. They didn't even issue a citation. Apartment April has since been fired. Yeah. If you go to the KMOV website, KMOV.com, you can see the video. It's ridiculous. It's also America. This is who we are. Then there's, Minnesota. Oh, hey, thank you very kindly. Thank you to Trevor. Thank you, Trevor, very, very much. We are now down to only $125 to go for fundraising on the evening. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks, Trevor. Up to Minnesota. Representative Karen Housley is the woman who's running as the Republican nominee for Al Franken's old seat. And there it is. She's squaring off against Tina Smith this November for the seat that Al Franken was run out of. She got into the Minnesota House of Representatives back in 2012. She's 54 years old. And apparently, yeah, there we go again. Writing on Facebook, she said years back, "Michelle is so far from cool. Don't we expect our first ladies to at least stand up straight? And my dear sister, know the proper etiquette and do not touch the queen. I do miss Nancy Reagan, Ronald even more. Speaking of bedtime for Bonzo, I think even that chimp stood up straighter than Michelle." Uh-oh, someone's going to make a comment. Yeah, she compared, because, you know, Republican racist can't help it. It's like some sort of Klansman Tourette's. Jesus. I wonder if she thinks that melanoma stands up. Does melanoma stand up straight enough for her? Because melanoma is so the most bullied woman in the world. Well, I'll buy that if we're going to assume that Donald Trump's the one bullying her, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. Yeah, the story of Apartment April, white lady, black guy. Marty sussed that out pretty quick. Lee in New York, Saudi energy. Even if the world does not go to Saudi Arabia for fossil fuel, it may still get energy from them. Because the Saudis are building the world's largest solar project.
Mm-hmm.
One wonders what it would take to civilize that bunch. Yeah. Oh, and in the course of the conversation with Papantonio, I mentioned Beto. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, has chickened out of two debates, and now he's even afraid to sit down with the newspaper. The Dallas Morning News, not exactly a liberal rag, extended invitations to both Beto O'Rourke and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, to be interviewed by them. Beto O'Rourke said, sure. Well, today, Mark Wilson, who's the editor of the paper, said, for those asking why we had a news article about Beto O'Rourke's editorial board interview, but not one about Senator Ted Cruz, it's because Cruz declined our invitation to meet with the board. The meeting was to have taken place right now. Ted knows everybody hates him. Ted knows that the only reason he's in the Senate of the United States is because, any generic Republican just about would be, up until this year. So somebody's advising Rafaelito to rope-a-dope. Just get back in the corner and cover up and take the body blows and hope you make it till the bell rings. Are Texas Republicans really that chicken shit? Do they respect cowards? Because really, for all the tough talk about don't mess with Texas and so forth, Rafaelito, well, he seems a little bit lily-livered. Might cowardly. I mean, when you're afraid to sit down for an interview with a newspaper to talk about what an awesome senator you are, that's not a good sign. No. Oh, by the way, like I said, the lines are open. If there's anything on your mind, feel free to jump in. 304-574-8178. 304-640. I don't know why I keep doing that. 304-640-2829. Toll free 844 The Horn. And Skype to Skype Bob Kincaid Horn. Haha, that's a good one. Little cowbell. Little cowbell for Jason. Beto versus Beta. Yeah, no kidding. Not exactly an alpha dog. Rafaelito, no, not even a little bit. Halloween's coming. And, they're haunted houses. There's a one-night-only haunted New River Gorge thing. I don't go in for that. I don't enjoy being scared. But a lot of people do. Haunted hay rides, haunted houses, haunted abandoned school building. The only thing, I don't know, maybe over in Beckley, do they even do a haunted coal mine thing for the Halloween season at the exhibition coal mine? I don't know. In Akron, they have something called Fright Fest, Akron, Ohio. Haunted house thing. Yeah. and people enjoy that sort of thing. Sarah Lalonic and her boyfriend Ryan Carr went to the Akron Fright Fest. And, you know, you walk around, you go through, what have you. It was said to be an R-rated haunted house. And Sarah Lalonic said, if you're a victim of sexual assault, do not go to the attached haunted houses. They pushed my boyfriend down on a bed, which was plywood covered with a sheet in a four-poster bed frame, and humped him in front of me. Actors at the Fright Fest yell racial slurs. ABC 5 interviewed her, and she said, there was a man in a mask standing over my boyfriend. My boyfriend was on the edge, and he was being pushed down. Then the boyfriend started talking and said, she comes over and yells, stop, what are you doing? That's my boyfriend. Not anymore, he's mine now, I'm going to rape him. And then he started thrusting against me. Another person who went to the haunted house said, one of the actors inside grabbed my ankles and shins, pulled my legs apart, and was thrusting while telling me to scream, Papa. What the? And of course they paid for this. And, you know, it's Halloween season, so there will be the usual various stories of racist Halloween costumes and pop culture costumes. Jesus. Stormy Daniels. There's a Stormy Daniels costume with a short dress and a false bust. One person on Twitter said, just a warning, we are around 18 days away from white frat brothers putting on a MAGA hat and blackface and calling it a Kanye costume, and 19 days away from Kanye defending them. Then there's the question of how many Brett Kavanaugh costumes there'll be. Saudi royal family costumes, anyone? Yeah. In regard to my question as to whether they do a haunted exhibition coal mine in Beckley, Earther says, yeah, they probably do, Bob. All they have to do is put a paper skeleton above the opening. Boom, scary. Mm-hmm. More in Monday. We got plenty of them. It wouldn't be more in Monday if we didn't have a clip from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Brian Kilmeade and Steve Doocy and the attack blonde in the middle. That's Ainsley Earhart. She got upset about the CBS interview. Obligatory Star Trek reference coming from Lee. Watch the episode Cat's Paw to get into the Halloween mood. Yeah. Yeah, Leslie Stahl asked Geezer Disgustus too many hard questions.
And he's so confident. Notice how he answered any and all questions at press conferences and with Leslie Stahl last night on 60 Minutes. Come on, bring it on. Give me the question and I'll answer
it.
It's a remarkable contrast between this president and any president in my lifetime.
Right. I remember when Hillary was running, we asked her to come on our show all the time and she never would. Hats off to President Trump, who will go up against any journalist, even the ones who aren't in favor of him, and answer all the questions.
Yeah, and you know, it's very...
Yeah. Are we talking about the same Donald Trump? The one that talks about the fabulous climate reports that he's got that nobody's ever seen? But Ainslie wasn't done. Come on. Oh, darn it. Sometimes I hate Firefox. Oh, well. You lucked out. You don't have to hear any more of her. But nonetheless, she said that Leslie Stahl peppered. Endlessly. Leslie Stahl peppered Donald Trump endlessly with questions. In an interview. The horror. Mm-hmm. Because, well, he's the God Emperor. You don't pepper him. You don't even salt him. Is there any hope? Are all those middle American white folks with all that economic anxiety? Are they beginning to learn? CNN asked their panel
from the midterm elections, so we thought it would be a good time to get the pulse of the people. I recently sat down with the all-important independent voters, the ones you're about to meet, five of whom voted for Donald Trump, say they're now very disappointed in him and very motivated to vote against Republicans for all the issues they think President Trump is getting wrong. You all are the all-important independent voters that so many people are watching for the midterms. Anthony, how are you feeling?
Afraid.
Of what?
The dictator in the White House.
And what?
He has no empathy for anything. He will never admit when he makes a mistake.
What were you imagining when you voted for President Trump?
And he said the system is rigged, and he said he was going to be a new sheriff in town. And all he's done is surrounded himself with crooks. How many people have been indicted that were close cahoots with him? And there, in front of the world stage, he looks at Putin and puts his arm around him and says, "This is my buddy."
The divisiveness in this country right now and the rhetoric coming from the president is a daily exhausting thing. I worry that the dictator, the wannabe dictator in the White House, will make it where we don't even have any more elections. I mean, he is like siding with Vladimir Putin. Kim Jong-un is now having love letters written to Donald Trump.
When I voted for Trump, I was looking for change, I was looking for maybe a non-political person coming in and a businessman bringing his expertise, his skills.
What a bunch of chumps. I mean, okay, so... Yeah. No. No, what a bunch of chumps. They actually believed that shit? Did they do any reading of their own before they went and cast their ballots in 2016? Did they never hear of Trump University, Trump vodka, Trump meat in the mail? And they still went, yeah, okay, derp. Ah, good one. Wait a minute. A little cowbell for Lee in New York. Asking Trump questions. If Trump will answer all of Leslie Stahl's questions, he should have no problem answering all of Robert Mueller's questions. Robert in Australia, we're on the same page. What the frack did they think was going to happen? What happens every time a Republican gets into the White House? They steal you blind. And they commit crimes. Rocket science, it ain't. Yeah, me too. Jack in Shreveport. Stuart Varney's voice? I hate that guy. The way he was talking, you'd think he was referring to a religious figure. So you got to wonder what these simpletons will do when 2020 comes around and whoever happens to be the Democratic nominee turns out to be the most liberal person ever to run for president. Well, I guess he's a crook, but he's our crook, right? I'm sorry, I'm just not particularly sanguine about their ability to get unchumped and stay unchumped, because they are, thank you, Reverbo, well-chumped. Hey, let's go check in with Todd down in South Carolina. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Bob, how's it going, man?
Yeah, you know, it's been kind of gray and sloppy and wet, but I got to play outside yesterday, which was cool.
That's what I'm talking about. That brisket and smoke. Ugh. And that good wood. Whoa.
Yeah, see, I knew you would be psyched about the wood. Barbecue freaks get excited about wood. And the thing is,
by the way,
these hunks of grape wood actually, you know, it's real green, and they were still leaking sap.
See, that's
wow.
Man, you're gonna let that dry out in the sun. That's gonna be, well, whatever you do with it. Hey, folks who don't know, that's just pure flavor. Good grief. I was gonna say that soil underneath where that wood was, you know, you see how rich that grass looks? That's some serious soil.
Well, that's the thing. You get some really rich soil in Appalachia, and it's about 6 inches deep.
Oh, my God. I bet it smells. It has a good, sweet, earthy smell to it. Anyway. I was shocked when I heard the 60 Minutes interview, you know, with Leslie Stahl.
Did you find yourself yelling at the television?
Absolutely. I caught it late because I woke up in the middle of the night. Everybody was asleep. And I woke up, I wake up early. And so I pulled it up on YouTube and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? Like she was like trying to look at him like, wow, you're the president and you are the dumbest motherfucker I've ever seen in my life. Wow. I mean, Leslie Stahl, look who has, she has interviewed anybody who's anybody in the world. I mean, she was old when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Come on, she's been around forever. Now, this our president is a buffoon. I mean, how can I'm just all right? I'm gonna calm down. I'm not gonna be hyperbolic. So
breathe.
I'm just right.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make me get Tracy involved.
But when you combine what we saw with that 60 Minutes interview with Washington Journal,
Now, see, you know, you and Steve from Georgistan, y'all work that corner pretty well together. And I just got a heads up from Steve saying that it was on Washington Journal yesterday.
It was on. These folks, they're deranged. You thought Obama derangement syndrome. Oh, my God. I'm trying to figure out, I don't think there's any, like, you know, I used to joke about re-education camps. There's something going on with folks. And I'm really going to be serious right now. I'm really going to be serious. There's something wrong, seriously wrong, when you have at least a third of our population that can look at the same information that we look at and come to completely different conclusions. You know, because, well, and I'm not even going to talk about Trump right now because he is who he is. I'm talking about the people that follow him.
No, we are living in a Monty Python skit. Did you ever hear the professional logician bit?
No.
It's after the scene. It's on the soundtrack record. It's not on the in the movie. In Holy Grail, the scene where if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood. And therefore a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, in the soundtrack recording, a professional logician comes on who says that was utter bullshit. But he said, of the type so often committed by my wife, and just work with me here, given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live underwater, my wife will conclude not that all mackerel live underwater, but that if she buys kippers, it will not rain, or that trout live in trees, or even that I do not love her anymore. She calls using her intuition. I call it bullshit because it is not logical. Well, we're there, Todd. We're there. 30% of the people think that trout live in trees. We're there. It used to be funny. It's not funny anymore.
It's not funny. That's what I'm saying. It's right. And now, like, you know how when you laugh, like, something's really funny, you go to a funny concert or something, you laugh for like 2 or 3 hours, and then your stomach hurts, and it's like, you know, I'm done laughing. I don't. It's painful now. I don't want to laugh anymore. It's not funny. You know, I need to do something else. I'm going to go to sleep, get something to eat. But this misery just drags on, and the folks that call in on Washington Journal and they say, and the projection. I don't know. I'm trying to figure this shit out. I really am, because it is a mental illness. There is no goddamn way we can all look at the same fucking thing. I mean, if we can all see blue, and we all know, any educated person knows, it's all radio waves, you know, when we see. It's not really what we think it is, but whatever. We all agree blue is blue, whatever. But this shit
we used to think we did.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. We used to.
Now blue is now blue is bad and red is MAGA.
I don't understand. And I mean, this woman yesterday, she was saying how violent the Democrats are, and it just spews hate, and they just don't understand it. And poor Brett Kavanaugh, and he's been a righteous man his whole life, and they just dragging him through the mud. And that woman is just deranged, and he had to go out there and make fun of a woman who obviously, and you know, that's a complicated situation. And I want to bring this up one more time. It's too late now, but the DN, whoever, our side made a huge mistake by focusing on these sexual allegations. They should have focused on something you could prove, the perjury. See how it's lost now?
Yeah, but hold on. I think you're falling into a trap, Todd.
What?
Because if they had proved perjury beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, the standard proof in a goddamn trial, if they'd done that, it wouldn't have mattered. Perjury wouldn't matter. Rape didn't matter. Arson wouldn't have mattered. Receiving stolen property didn't matter. Because this was just brute force, blunt force, raw power politics. There would have been a reason not to believe the perjury charge. There would have been a reason not to believe, you know, because it's not like those things weren't pursued. And they sent, and the Republicans
right.
simply
You're
didn't,
right.
didn't
you know,
they didn't fucking care. I mean, is my analysis flawed?
We were not ready. Our system was not set up for this kind of shit. Our system was not set up for a despot. The Electoral College is a failed institution. See, that was the last safety valve, and that failed. So we don't know how deep this corruption goes. But yeah, you know what? You're right. You know, I don't know why I didn't, whatever. I was being too logical. You're right. It wouldn't matter because at the end of the day, they are the judge and jury. And they would, like Mitch said, hey, this is it. We had the votes. That's all that matters is the votes. Doesn't matter if the guys are damn, is not going to be crude. So it doesn't matter.
And by the way, Steve from Georgia Stan just wrote in and said, the Rubes were actually rationalizing murder of the Saudi reporter. I couldn't believe it, man.
A lot of them. They were like, well, you know.
Well, you know, MAGA, he may have just needed killing MAGA.
Man, we're in trouble. We are, because these people are not going away. Trump will die. And look, these people are going somewhere. And they got guns and they drink liquor.
Hard, bad liquor.
But,
I mean, they're not sitting around sipping at the Grey Goose.
No.
Or the Pappy Van Winkle or whatever.
So that brings me, I have a quick question. First of all, Leslie Stahl, now, that shit was painful. I'm sorry, but it was like, wow. Like, what more do we need to see? What more do normal, like, rational people need to see about a failed presidency? You know, Morning Joe, oh, my God. They were like, look. And I don't know if you've seen The Circus, man, but that shit is fucking Have you seen Heilman's?
No, I haven't seen that. Is it any good?
Oh, man, it's good. Oh, it's good. I didn't think it would be that good. It's good. It's very good. You might be able to find it out on, you know, out there somewhere. Because I don't have Showtime either, but it's out there somewhere. Yes, it's good. But so this Morning Joe, they diced up the interview pretty well, and yeah, I don't know how. This is who we are now. We are the trailer track. Trailer trash people, man. That's who we are. You know? I mean, that's all we can... That's it. Because he's going to win again. He is going to win again, I think. Because unless something changes. Remember, when they vote, when the maggots vote, their vote counts more than your vote, more than my vote. Their votes count. And, I hope he doesn't. But who do we have? Who do we have? That's what I'm saying. We should be now back down to like three people, vetted, strong people.
Well, I guess Elizabeth Warren made a pretty good case for herself today by clapping back at him over the Pocahontas bullshit.
It looked good.
And calling him out and saying, okay, there's your proof. You said you'd give $1 million to a charity of my choice. I choose the Indigenous Women's Resource Network, or I think something like that. And, of course, the deadbeat, the con artist, the fucking fraud said, I never made that promise. He's on fucking tape doing it.
Oh, come on. Everybody saw him make that. You can't deny that. Yeah. So So this is what I want to know. Who is running the country? Because I remember when this orange fascist said he was going to get on the campaign trail months ago, and that is exactly what he did. So who's running the country?
Melanoma?
He's stupid.
Little boron? I don't know.
Is it John Kelly? I know you said you didn't know, but I mean, this is something that we have to think about, because he can't be running the country. First, he's ignorant.
Well, Lawrence pointed out the other night, he and Trump are the same person. They just talk differently. Kelly is every bit as much of a racist as Trump is. And he doesn't have the UCMJ or the Marine Corps manual of arms to keep him in line anymore. He's off the chain.
Well, I absolutely agree with you there. I mean, I've always thought that he showed General Kelly or whatever he is, he showed himself for what he is a while ago with that Civil War statement, and then here we have Trump talking about General Lee again. See, Kelly's in his ear, you know. And I don't know if you remember, I actually, because I like to watch that Civil War documentary, like every few months I watch it.
Oh, the Ken Burns.
Yes, and that is a quote when Kelly said that, well, it was a failure to compromise. That is a direct quote from Shelby Foote. Directly at the beginning of a chapter, I forget which one it is, but I was like, "Wow, that's where he got this." And see, it's not just one comment. He has a pattern. This dude has a pattern. And then he's a Southie. You know, I'm not saying all Southies are racist, but you know, I know some Southies. Then they, you know, they tell me like, "Let me know when you're coming by because, you know, it's a rough neighborhood." So, but yes. So then we got Miller. We have John Kelly. We have the orange racist. You know, so it's the veneer is over. You know, we just have to accept the fact. And I don't know. And that's part of the problem. These maggots, if you call them, you say they swear they love. No, don't be a PC. Just tell it like it is. So when you tell them they're fucking racist, they can't stand it. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. And they are. I mean, did you happen to see the story? Because I was talking about it last week. The New York Republican Club, or the Metropolitan New York Republican Club, or whatever they call them, Midtown Republican Club. They had that event with Gavin McInnes the other night, and lo and behold, the little Nazis, the Proud Boys, decided to curb stomp some people to celebrate. The video's out there.
Celebrate.
Yeah, and the vaunted New York Police Department didn't intervene, didn't even try to stop them, even though they were detailed to the event. And only because a bunch of hell's been raised over it is the NYPD finally saying, well, you know, we might charge 9 Proud Boys with assault. Damn it, you made us do it.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Is it out of bounds to think that human behavior might dictate that when you have someone at the top of our country who behaves in a certain manner, that it gives the okay signal to just everyday folk that, you know what, I just want to be free. I want to say what I want to say. I want to do what I want to do because the president's got my back. Is that out of bounds? Do you think that's crazy?
No, it's neither out of bounds nor crazy. It is. It's actually to be expected. When a white supremacist gets into the White House, white supremacists are gonna feel like, you know, the barn door's open. And you know this, Jesus Christ. If you go over to Right Wing Watch. You can find the video of it, of what happened. And then they went wild in Portland again. I mean, Jesus.
I don't think we need that in Portland because, you know, they're already, that's Oregon. They've already got the, you know, the root of that white supremacy thing going in Oregon. I mean, they don't need to awaken that giant.
I mean, there's photographs and video of them just kicking the shit out of a guy laying on the ground.
Wait a minute. Doesn't that sound like Hitler's folk?
Yeah, it sounds like the SA.
I mean, this is too much now.
And when media outlets called the NYPD, they were silent. They had nothing to say. They wouldn't answer any questions. And the NYPD showed up during the violence and didn't arrest anybody.
Well,
and then of course Gavin McInnes, the leader of this the filthy bunch, he said, "I have a lot of support in the NYPD, and I very much appreciate that." It took Andrew Cuomo calling for the FBI and the New York State Police Hate Crimes Unit to investigate to get the NYPD to even move.
Man, we're in trouble.
And again, the whole event there was to at the New York Republican Club. I'm sorry, Metropolitan Republican Club. The whole reason for that was to celebrate the 1960 assassination of the leader of the Japanese Socialist Party by a right-wing Japanese radical young man. And that has become a meme in right-wing circles.
Well, look, man, they know this is their day. They know this is the dawning. You know, this is the day, man. This is the era now of the rise. You know, this is the last great fight of the Caucasian, because they know that, you know, the birth rate is down. This is the last grasp. But I'm more concerned about the law enforcement, because you couple that with the fact that our attorney, our little cracker ass attorney general, a little fucking elf, has already said that he doesn't believe in any oversight of any local law enforcement, but pull back on all that, you know. So that's like back into pre-civil rights era type of enforcement. Now, and we all know that, I don't know, that's frightening, man. This is crazy. Well, anyway, we're fully in fascism now. That's what that looks like. We're fully in fascism. That's it.
I mean, this McInnes character leaves the event in New York's Saturday night, and he waves a sword in the air.
Victory. Ain't that some shit?
Yeah, it really is.
That's disgusting, man. I had no idea. I've been kind of caught up. I had no idea. That is in New York. So you see, that's in New York. So if it happens in New York, that's... Oh, man. Well... I don't know. I just don't know. We just have to ride out of this and make sure everybody, man, make sure I checked. I went to the website to make sure I was not knocked off the voter rolls. It's too late now, less than a month, but everybody make sure you're still registered if you vote.
Are you?
Vote. Oh yeah, I went yesterday. I made sure. Oh, I'm not missing that. But for whatever it means, you know, because that's all we have. This is a real push, and I don't see it going away. I really don't, because the minority feels like they're emboldened and they're in power, and you know, it's frightening. And the more Trump is frightened, you know, he's not above going to war just to distract, you know, whack the dog. He's not above anything. He's not above anything. But anyway, that's why we have to use our diversions, man. There's not too much. I don't know. I don't see. All I'm seeing now is kind of we have to look out for each other because they don't give a fuck about us now. This is ridiculous. And I think this economy is about to take a real big dip pretty soon. It's overheated. You know, this is all.
Well, between the tariffs, the rising interest rates, and the tax cuts, Matt Taibbi in Rolling Stone is suggesting that there's some serious shit coming down the pipe, and he's pretty sharp.
Yeah, I follow Matt. His work is always good. He doesn't come out with any bullshit. If you know what I mean, you know that already. That's why you said that. Yeah. So, you know, we just have to kind of brace ourselves, I think, because this is going to be ugly. I mean, by the time we figure out what has happened, he would have already done Putin's bidding and kind of dragged us down. So we're on the same level as a lot of other countries in terms of economics. And
the disease spreads, Todd. Make no mistake, the disease spreads. The Indigenous Affairs Minister of Australia and several of the other so-called Liberal Party ministers. The Liberal Party is actually the Conservative Party in Australia. I think it has something to do with them being upside down on the planet. I don't know. It's their right wing. They signed off on a... It must be really boring to be in the Aussie Parliament. No offense, Robert, or Angry, or anybody. No. This white wing... member of the Australian Parliament, a woman by the name of Pauline Hanson, she filed a bill. And the bill simply said, it is okay. Wait a minute, I think I get to do my cheesy Australian accent here.
It is okay. It's okay to be white.
It is okay to be white. And so, lo and behold, the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, a guy by the name of Nigel Scullion, as well as the Minister for Trade and the Minister for Communications, they all signed off on it. It's okay to be white. And, of course, it's not going at all well, going over at all well with, say, the Indigenous population in Australia. A guy named Luke Pearson, who is the founder of Indigenous X, that's an anti-racism group, said, the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, voting in support of what is widely known to be a white supremacist slogan, it's okay to be white, makes his position as minister entirely untenable. He needs to resign. But Pauline Hanson, she said that... such a simple sentence should go without saying, but I suspect many members in this place would struggle to say it. Mercifully, it lost 31-28, but the fact of the matter is, white supremacism is alive and well, and it ain't just below the Mason-Dixon line in the United States. Because it's a principal element and a key component of global fascism.
I'm not feeling confident that this is just beginning. I don't even think this thing has even matured yet. This movement. I don't think so. But this thing with Australia, if you know anything about Australia, that is so preposterous. It's like saying a white American saying, you know, it's okay to be non-Indian, as in non-Native American, which most of them are gone now because they were killed. And it's like, a super minority. I mean, the indigenous folk, the Aborigines, are a super minority in Australia, a super minority. They've always been subjugated. And, I mean, come on, that's just bullshit. You're making a problem where there's no problem.
There we go.
Well, look, man, I was shocked. I just wasn't, you know, a bunch of stuff. But that damn interview with Leslie Stahl, that was just breathtaking. And you know, this guy is on. He's smelling his piss now, man. There's no stopping him. And, you know, he's insane, and God knows what's going to happen. And see, when we get the results of this investigation, no matter what it is, it's going to be a mess. Can't trust the courts. So I don't know what to say. I don't know. Hopefully somebody is calling you up, man. I don't know.
I don't know either, Todd. For what it's worth, I don't know either. But I know it's, you know, it's getting worse. I mean, down in Florida, I don't know if you saw this one. A guy who had led a counter protest to the Parkland March for Our Lives. He's a commissioner in Lakeland County, and I guess he runs a Army surplus store or something. And a 50-year-old guy.
I'm already confused. Are you saying that there's somebody who is marching against the student movement who does condone gun violence?
Yes, and he owns and he's a member of the county commission in Lakeland County, Florida, and he owns an Army surplus store.
Oh, God.
His name is Michael Dunn. A guy named Cristobal Lopez allegedly had stolen a hatchet from his store. Okay, this is over in the Tampa area.
Mm-hmm.
He confronted the shoplifter, said, "You gonna pay for the hatchet?" And he grabs the guy by the shirt and shoots him at least once. The guy collapses to the pavement, shakes, and then dies.
Damn.
And all this happens on camera. He walks back and forth, makes no effort to resuscitate, does nothing, and the guy's dead by the time the police show up. And he hasn't even been charged.
Oh, see, this is, oh, man, that's a lynching. Fuck that. Oh, my God.
The Attorney General's office that's run, of course, by the woman that Donald Trump tried to buy off, Pam Bondi. Well, they and the cops are investigating. But the guy was described as a transient agricultural worker.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's saying, I was standing my ground. I was justified in shooting him. He had a hatchet.
You know, this castle doctrine is dangerous. Because I'm telling you, when I went for my concealed carry, and the way he described it, it's like, look, you have the authority now to take someone's life. If you feel threatened, they tell you that. If someone walks up to you with no weapon, whatever, but to you, in your mind, they look threatening, you can shoot them down. If you have a concealed carry permit, you can shoot them dead and say, well, I felt threatened, just like a policeman. You know, same excuse. That's the law. Which means that these scaredy cat white folks who carry guns, all they got to say is that spooky-ass nigger with the buck eyes looks like he's doing the cocaine and raping white women. I got to shoot his ass. See, that's what that's about. See, we've gone back to 1869 and shit.
Yeah, well, okay, so it was this past Saturday morning up in Buffalo when a couple by the name of Jacqueline and Dave Archie went out to their car, a minivan, and they'd been out doing their Christmas shopping early. And so they had a bunch of Christmas gifts that they were going to hide, you know, from their kids until Christmas. And somebody had broken into the minivan, stabbed the car seats, trashed the inside of the van, stole hundreds of dollars from Jacqueline Archie's purse, and stole all the Christmas gifts, except for the black Barbie, which they left.
Oh, my God.
And they scratched the words nigger and bitch into the minivan's paint. They cut up their children's clothing. And Merca.
Let me ask you, why are a lot of white folks okay with all this racism and outright bigotry and just nastiness, and then they claim they're being beset upon you're being beset upon because you can't call somebody a nigger or kick a black person in the mouth and when they look at you funny.
Well, see, in 2018, it's reverse racism to tell white racists that they can't use those words. Got it? It's kind of like the Proud Boys and Gavin McInnes. Ron in Raleigh wrote a minute ago and said, well, Bob, you do understand that Gavin has the right to keep and bear arms. However, if my black ass was out there swinging my katana, I would be shot dead in a New York second. New York second. See what I did there? Yeah. And Ron asks, P.S., was that your female cousin Adelaide Kincaid? It was, Ron. It was.
Adelaide. Ding-ling.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Man, we have to do better than this. This is just. And you know what the fuck, man? Flaked out. That little woman, little tease, Susan. She flaked out.
Well, at the end of the day, they're still who they always were. Reagan Republicans. I guess people get tired of hearing me say it, but God damn it, every time I hear the name Ronald Reagan, I remember opened his 1980 campaign for president in the home of the Klan. Could you free? You let shit like that go at your peril, you know?
Black folks never forgot that because we remember it happened overnight. Overnight. It was like, oh shit, racism is back in vogue. Literally, it happened overnight. You know, we went from Jimmy Carter, like, we can try, and you got these little enclaves of people who are doing the right thing. Back to being troglodytes, you know, just like that. So, you know, and the folks who don't recognize that, you're not conscious. I don't know. Just listen to the black folk. We know. You know, see, that's what a lot of white folks don't understand. It's hard for white folks to see the whole picture. The whole picture. Not all white folks, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, because black folks, we see things from a different perspective. But we have to see it from the white perspective, too. If you're a professional, you have a real job or whatever, you know. And that's why some of these motherfuckers just shut the fuck up. When we tell you we're being persecuted, shut the fuck up.
But they like it, Todd. That's the whole point. You know, I'm looking at something from a guy, a Yale philosophy professor named Jason Stanley, and he's an expert on fascism and propaganda. The New York Times asked him to do a piece for him, and He said, fascists create an overwhelming sense of nostalgia for a past that is racially pure, traditional, and patriarchal. From Mussolini to Hitler to Erdogan, fascist leaders position themselves as father figures and strong men. As long as he, and yes, it's always a he, remains in power, everything is possible. Well, the people we're talking about are yearning for a bygone day when those people knew their place. Whether those people are people of color who know to step off, or whether it's gay people who know to stay in the closet, or whether it's women people who know to stay home barefoot and pregnant and never, ever, ever cross hubby. Those were the good old days. That is when America was great.
But you know what, Bob? I want to say this. I'm going to be positive. Right?
Okay, I could use a little.
I mean, I have younger friends, and the young people, they're not down with this program at all. They're like, but they don't vote, you know, but they're like, what in the hell? That's why they're so turned off, but it's all this shit. Because they all listen to the same music. They all pretty much do the same thing.
Let me ask you a question. Did you go through a phase in your life where you didn't vote when you were young?
Never. No.
Me either. Why is it that from the moment that he was able to, Todd went to the polls and voted, and from the moment that I was able to, I went to the polls and voted? What made the difference?
In my household, there was no choice. I mean, it wasn't like I was going to get. I mean, you had to be 18, but I mean, cultural capital. That's just the way. That's what we did. You didn't even think about it. It wasn't even an option not to vote. You know, that's part of being a responsible citizen.
Yeah, and you know, you've got that part going for you where people bled and died to get the vote.
Right.
Now, I'm just the white boy son of Depression era white parents. But they were absolutely obsessive about voting. You don't not vote. I know that's tortured language,
exactly.
But yeah. So when you say, yeah, young people, but they don't vote, I honest to God don't understand why. It ain't.
I'll tell you why right now. They are not stupid. They see how fucked up shit is, and they're like, man, the old people have just fucked everything up. I'm telling you, because I'm friendly with my neighbors, and they're two doors down. They could care less about voting, but they know what's going on. But they're like, you know what? They say nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter. And these are black, white. I mean, they all listen to the same music. You know, I'm talking about white boys with do-rags and just everybody look. And this is not the first time I've seen this. You know, because I've been old for a little while now. You know, we're around the same age. We've been old for, you know, at least 15 years. So, you know, it's a different, I don't know, man. These folks, the young folks, they see nothing really changes in their mind. And they don't care. That's why they're using condoms less. If you notice syphilis, the sexually transmitted diseases on the rise, they're not scared of AIDS anymore. You know, they don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck. And so, you know, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. It's really sad. I think they've given up.
Well, I hope not, because it's the fact that, you know, 80-year-olds are being allowed to determine the future of 20-year-olds that has us in a shitload of the problems that we're in. You know, I saw a list.
And I like what you said. I like what you said, because I'll never forget. You said this about maybe 4 months ago. You're like, you know what? We need somebody young. Fuck all these old. And you're right. We need. Remember you said that?
Right. And I'm sticking to it, because, you know, there's. I saw a list of preferred Democratic potential presidential candidates, the top of the list was like was like Joe Biden at 23%.
And like 102.
And Elizabeth Warren wasn't far, very far down that list either, and she's pushing 70. And if you operate on something like the seven generations philosophy of a lot of the Native American tribes, then you can trust 80-year-olds to make decisions for 20-year-olds because they're making decisions seven generations out. But when an 80-year-old billionaire is making decisions 5 years out, then that's how the 20-year-olds get screwed. I mean, how many 20-year-olds do you think know that they are already deep in hock for the tax cuts that the Republicans just that the Republicans passed and are now trying to pass tax cut part two permanent?
Less than 10%.
So there we go. Well, it's been a great conversation, Todd. I thank you for it.
Thank you, Bob. You're doing a great job. And don't forget to go to the website and tap the PayPal or Patreon if you want to do a monthly subscription. And keep it abreast.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bob's got it going on.
Appreciate it, Todd. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd in South Carolina. And it's time to wrap things up. Welcome back to the air, Mike Malloy. Hey, thanks to Charlie. Charlie took us down to only $25 to go to finish the night. Thank you very, very much, Charlie. So maybe that other $25 gets wiped out and whoop, we'll be even for tomorrow. That would be awesome. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this conversation. Thanks to Mike Papantonio for joining me for a conversation this evening. Go over to thedevilyouknow.com or iTunes, whatever. Watch this movie. It will be worth your effort and worth your money. It really will be. Thanks, of course, to our chat room moderators. Thank you to Sparky this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.